to yet another episode of Stories of InfoSec Journeys podcast. I'm Shruti Kamath, your podcast host. In case you're new here, I would highly recommend you listen to the introduction episode. And to others, welcome back and thank you so much for your support. Also, if you haven't given the podcast a follow on the social media yet, go show some support by following us on Instagram, Facebook and LinkedIn at Stories of InfoSec Journeys and on Twitter at InfoSec Journeys. And don't forget to rate us on Spotify and Apple Podcast. As you've already seen the announcement, it's a season finale episode today. With us, we have Jay Hira, who's a cybersecurity strategy and information director with over 15 years of international experience supporting financial services organizations to become more cyber resilient through the adoption of zero trust principles to build trust and attract more customers. He has a proven track record of partnering with stakeholders across the organization, including the board and CXO, of successfully influencing change and delivering cyber resilience capabilities aligned with IT strategy and broader business objectives. Jay is best known for building high-performance teams and creating an inclusive culture that empowers individuals and promotes equality, well-being, and fairness. Welcome to the podcast, Jay. Thank you so much for taking time to be here. In your own words, do you want to introduce yourself to our listeners?
Of course. Thank you for having me here, Shruti. My name is Jay Hira, and I consider myself a lifelong learner. When I was young, studying at university, I was very competitive with laser-sharp focus on the rat race to being number one. When I joined the workforce, I got hit with this dose of humility that changed my perspective in the course of my career. The need to be the best was replaced with a strong desire to collaborate, share, learn, and grow with the team to achieve collective wins. As you can imagine, Shruti, winning alone feels so empty and isn't as fulfilling as winning together in a team. Anyways, coming back to the introduction, as I grew older and wiser, at least I'd like to believe so, that I'm growing wiser, I became clearer about my purpose, intentional about who I wanted to be, and I channeled all of my energy into pursuing my passion for cybersecurity. And so to summarize, it is my curiosity, constant urge to learn, and my passion for promoting diversity and collaboration in cybersecurity is how I'd introduce myself to our listeners today, Shruti.
Thank you so much for that lovely introduction. So I want to ask you that, what is that that introduced you to InfoSec and what has been your journey like so far? Looking back, how does that feel?
Of course. So let me start from the beginning. I grew up in a small town named Gandhidham in the state of Gujarat in Western India during the time when internet was gaining popularity. I know that look on your face. So for our listeners, Shruti is having the look when you take kids to a museum and they're looking at an historical artifact. That's the look that she has at the moment. Anyways, I accept that I'm too old and we need to continue. So growing up at the time when the internet was turning mainstream naturally led me to be drawn to computers. And I secretly hoped that computers will play a key role in my life. Now, if only dreaming was enough, I was an average student through my schooling. And somehow I managed to go from being an average to below average at the time when it really mattered, which was the year 12. Now, I remember that this very defining moment in my life, which was I was 18. I was sitting down in a principal's office at an engineering college in Yavatmal, which is 1,000 miles away from where I grew up in Gujarat, in Gandhidham. But anyways, I was sitting down at the principal's office at this engineering college in Yavatmal in Maharashtra with my dad by my side. I had secured admission to mechanical engineering. My father knew where my passion was. So he nicely asked the principal, what are my son's chances of switching to computer science? And to this, the principal laughingly responds saying, realistically, zero good, sir. Look at his track record. But I have to be fair, right? He wasn't wrong in saying that. But those blunt remarks that he made shook me inside out. That was the moment when I decided that I had to let my hard work speak for itself rather than going back to him through words. So I started working hard. I started getting top grades. And a year later, I got transferred to computer science. After completing my computer science, my curiosity to learn how network computers really communicated with each other took me into pursuing masters in network technology and IT infrastructure. My first job of finishing this master's program was that of a penetration tester. That is how I began my journey into the information security industry, which is now called as cybersecurity. Cybersecurity to me was a natural fit due to the constant flux of change, the need to adapt quickly, the continuous learning aspect, and ultimately the need for change in the industry to support innovation. I think I've been very lucky to have had access to opportunities that sometimes supported my career in moving vertically and at times laterally to broaden my skills. I worked across attack, defense, architecture, strategy and governance. And in my current role, I work as a strategy and transformation director, supporting financial services organizations to become more cyber resilient through the adoption of zero trust principles that in a way support with building trust, attracting more customers, and eventually leading to enablement of growth. So that's a bit of a background on what got me into where I am today.
So looking back, how does that feel?
It feels fulfilling, but as I grow older, I feel like it took me a very long time to discover who I am, to discover my voice. It feels like I never really had the courage to speak up and share what I really want to be standing for. So I feel that there's obviously a lot of ground that we've covered, but there's still a lot more that I want to learn, discover, and do for the industry.
Oh, all right. Thank you so much. That sounds lovely. I really liked about how you got introduced into, you know, the InfoSec industry. That is quite a story, I would say. So, yeah. So did you then get to meet your principal later in any part of your life?
I am still in touch with him via LinkedIn.
Oh, okay. Okay. All right. So when you've been in this industry for a while, right? So what has been some of your learnings and challenges that you faced?
I usually compare cybersecurity to a game of chess. I think it's only more complex with more players involved. So unfortunately, we're not facing one opponent, which makes it unfair. But let me come back to the unfair aspect of cybersecurity in a bit. The key to success in the game of chess is to protect the central piece, which is your king. Similarly, cybersecurity involves protecting data and intellectual property with layers of protection with complementary functions. Now, as a cybersecurity practitioner, I believe, and you know, we're both cybersecurity practitioners, so we both agree that one of the reasons we are in this industry, or we love being a part of this industry, is the constant flux of change, which means that we have to keep pace, constantly adapting and continuously learning. So let me focus on the challenge aspect of the question. And this is where I was trying to highlight the point of cybersecurity being unfair. Now, we just discussed chess, so probably time for us to move to boxing, which is my other passion. As you may have already noticed, the boxing gloves on the table in the background. Boxing, like any other competitive sport, is fair. Both the opponents in the ring have an equal opportunity to attack by throwing punches and defend by ducking from the oncoming punches. We rarely experience that in cybersecurity. For starters, we don't only have one opponent that we are paired against. To add to that, our opponents, which are the threat actors, are collaborating and innovating at a much faster pace than we are as cybersecurity practitioners. We're only defending, and at the risk of repeating myself, we're only defending in our own silos, and we're not collaborating enough in our industry or across industries to shore up defenses. I believe generally we're doing very well, as a community of cybersecurity practitioners, but we all need to come together as an industry and advocate for greater collaboration and support diversity. Because if you look at these two components, collaboration and diversity, they're equally important in fueling innovation, which in a way will turn this complex cybersecurity puzzle that we're trying to solve into a fair game.
All right. So you also want to talk a little bit about some of the learnings that you had like over the time?
So many of them. Where do I really begin? So my career in itself has been a deep and thoughtful learning journey. So like I said, when I started as a penetration tester, someone came up with a challenge that it's easy for you to attack, break into systems. Have you been on the other side to defend? So then that's when I went onto the defense side, worked as a SOC analyst to really understand how do we do threat hunting, how do we really defend against attacks. Then I wanted to work in the consulting space and interact with the CXOs to really understand what sort of challenges do they face. How do we really do messaging with the CXO? So I worked for a Big Four for a period of time. Then someone threw a challenge at me saying that it's easy for you to write reports and just walk away. Have you actually been on the other side, on the receiving end of the report? And have you actually done a transformation work on how do we now uplift the security capabilities and make them mature enough to, so that we reduce the risk and enable business? So that got me into my role as a delivery guy who then, looked at these reports from Big Four consulting firms and then created these programs, which would then deliver the capability uplift. Then I started enjoying working in the systems integration space where, there are obviously challenges when there's systems talking to each other. So I worked with a system integrator for a period of time. And then from there on, it was more of, can I really change the model? Can I really operate as a contractor which just works as a day rate contractor? I worked for a bank, worked for an insurance provider. Then I was attracted to the proposition of, how do I now work closely on delivering projects and programs and stay a bit more away from cybersecurity? So I tried that for a period of time. So it's just been, there's been so many learnings and so many different aspects overall through my journey in cybersecurity.
Wow, that sounds very, very diverse. That's like quite a learning that you've done there, I understand.
Thanks for that, Shruti. Yeah, I think each one of us has had interesting journeys, and it's just us reflecting on our journeys and pattern. I think at times it's we move in our life chasing goals, right, from one to the other. Sometimes we just need to reflect, pause, pat ourselves on the back on how far we have traveled. We don't do that often, right?
Yeah,
which
absolutely.
Is where we just constantly move from, okay, I want to achieve these three goals. We would have achieved two, but we're still waiting for the third one, but we haven't really celebrated. Once we get through the third one, we have the next three lined up already. So it just feels like a constant rat race. We need to probably wind down a bit and enjoy and celebrate our victories with people that are close to us, that have been with us through thick and thin.
Yeah, I think that's actually been one of my biggest learning in the past couple of years, where you don't really have to be doing everything or like that hustle culture, as you call it. But you can take it at your own pace and really learn to like pause, reflect, and like pat on your back for all that you've been doing. So it's not necessary that you have to have it all right, right? I think that's been like the biggest learning for me as well.
100%.
All right. I understand that you've been in the leadership role for quite some time now, right? So how has been your experience with that? And what is your advice for folks out there on how to create a leadership presence?
Let me take a long pause to gather my thoughts around the subject of leadership, because I start sharing what it means to me, just so I can, I've thought through. So leadership to me is practice. And let me expand that by sharing why. We cannot learn how to fly a Boeing 737 just by reading an operating manual. And similarly, it is going to be hard to assume a position of authority and bring together a team of problem solvers to get across a challenge. Now, let me be specific about, you know, my experience and talk through that. I've been very lucky to have had a very supportive environment where I've had the luxury of making mistakes and learning through my own mistakes. I strongly believe that leaders are created through diverse experiences that they've gathered through working across industry sectors or within a specific industry. The ability to make mistakes and the grace of a supportive environment to learn from the mistakes made. The core responsibility of a leader is to diligently bring a team or teams together to overcome obstacles or to solve a challenge. There wouldn't be a need for leadership if there wasn't an obstacle or a challenge, right? Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I do.
So I believe that a leader's success needs to be measured through their ability to empower, mentor, and coach the next generation of leaders, right? It's not just about getting through obstacles, bringing teams together and overcoming challenges. It's also about how do we continue to empower people around us, mentor them, coach them, and then make them better leaders than ourselves. Now, coming to the question on leadership presence, I'm just conscious that I'm not trying to dodge the question on leadership presence. I strongly feel that there is a place for every personality type in leadership. And you don't necessarily need to be a driver or an amiable or a particular personality type to be a leader. I believe as a leader, you've got to be comfortable in your own skin and be authentic and true to who you are. One skill, however, that I feel is important is how do you navigate people relationships so that you can work with individuals in supporting them to achieve their goals while you're constantly focusing on working together, bringing these individuals together in a team, and working towards the overall team goal. So I think it's that navigation of you know, how do you work across these people relationships and how do you then help people achieve their own individual goals as well as achieve the team goals, because that's what you're measured on in a way. Unfortunately, there's no secret sauce, and it is something that again comes from practice and experience, and which is why I started off by saying that leadership is about practice.
Yeah, I think I absolutely agree with what you mentioned earlier, right? The whole being authentic and helping others and mentoring them. That's quite like a key there, where you're actually helping people around you. And the people relation part is, I think, the most important part of the leadership aspect, right? So something what I actually understood or learned in the past couple of years is that empathy is the most underrated skill. Like, it's really, really underrated. I don't think people really understand or talk enough about how much it's really needed and required, especially when you're in a leadership role, right? Because that's when people really relate to you, if you're able to be empathetic with them. That really helps. And that's also when your peers or people who report to you really look up to you. That's also something I see, and with whatever you mentioned, right? I absolutely agree with that. But also empathy is something that I feel is extremely underrated. I was just thinking about it like a couple of days ago when I came across a similar scenario, and I'm like, wow, no one really talks about it enough.
Spot on. I think you get into any, or think of any conversation that you have, Shruti, with anyone in the industry. We have conversation wherein we listen to respond. We don't listen to empathize. We don't really register every single word that is coming our way. And being empathetic leader is about how do you really pay attention to what's being said to you. Sometimes it's about someone's just trying to get it out of their system. They don't expect a response or an answer from you. Whereas our objective when we're in a conversation is always more around, okay, I've got to pay attention to what's being said, but also respond. Sometimes it's all about just listening in.
Yeah, I think I had to learn that the hard way too, but this is generally in life, right? Like sometimes you just have to be there to listen and not really like tell people what to do, because probably at that moment they don't want you giving them any advice, but just want you to probably listen to what they have to say. So I guess that's where the practice begins. So yeah.
100%.
All right. So next one, I actually wanted to ask you, this is one of the questions that came in from our listener, like way early in the beginning of the podcast. And yeah, we're here at the season finale. So how is that you deal with the failures and criticism, and what is that you do to bring yourself back on track?
Okay. So let me split the question. Let me start with failures. I believe in failing fast and failing often. And as long as you're learning from that experience, you're getting stronger through every failure and building resilience, similar to how through exercising and breaking the muscle fiber, but supplementing with the right nutrition, we build stronger muscles. I think failure helps us become more resilient and get back quickly on our feet after being knocked down on the ground. It also helps us enjoy that success that we're craving for much more, especially when the success comes after constant and repetitive failures. So that's my point of view on failures. Now let's talk criticism. Again, I think we could categorize criticism into almost two different buckets. The first bucket is the voluntary criticism that you get without asking for any feedback. The second bucket is criticism that you receive in the form of a feedback. As there are different ways of dealing with each of them, which is why it's just better to bucket them separately. I'd highly encourage to completely ignore voluntary criticism if it's not coming from someone that you care deeply about. Everyone on the face of earth has the right to having an opinion on us, irrespective of whether we've done something remarkable or not, you know, not so. It's better to just take it in your stride and forget. Criticism coming from feedback that you requested needs to be taken with a grain of salt and in the right spirit, because that helps you improve, you know, and grow through life. Let me share two basic principles that have actually helped me in terms of dealing with a lot of different situations. One principle that applies very well in the workforce construct is embracing your strengths and weaknesses and being open to acknowledging what you know and what you probably need to learn from others that are around you. That's one of the principles. The second one is, I strongly believe that competing with others is a losing proposition. Each one of us has so much potential, and if we were to compete, we should compete with ourselves and become better with each passing day. So those are the two basic principles. If you start applying them in the workforce construct, if you're a student going through uni, if you apply these principles, they'll help you just get across the different sorts of failures, criticism that you're going to get.
Well, that's some lovely advice. Thank you for that.
You're very welcome. Again, it comes with age. Now I'm starting to show my age.
Okay, I think you stressed enough about that from the beginning. All right. So, okay. So with that, I wanted to ask you, what have some of the communities that you've been associated with, and what is that you love about them?
When you say community, do you mean chapters like IC2, ISACA?
Yeah, or... I mean, I'm referring to security communities. Like we have quite a lot of them around, right? So have there been any of them that you're associated with or like been actively working on? And what is that you love about them?
So let me expand that a bit more beyond just the information security or cybersecurity community. So ISC2, ISACA, there's the Australian Information Security Association in Australia. These are all communities that I've been closely associated with. And the primary reason for that has been the opportunities that they present to learn from our industry colleagues. That's why I'm personally passionate about working with universities and educators to support a smoother transition of students from universities into the cybersecurity workforce. We run programs to co-design solutions, working alongside university students to solve industry challenges. I'm also passionate about STEM advocacy at schools and educating the new generation of cyber heroes as young as 5 on the good and the bad actors of the cyberspace. I feel one of our duties as cybersecurity practitioners is to inform and empower this new generation of cyber heroes that are kids with tips on protecting their identity and staying safe online while they're dealing with these cyber villains such as bullies, scammers, and fakers. I think those are really important skills that we need to teach kids early. So I think those are just some of my areas of passion.
Wow, that sounds really interesting. So have you been associated with some community doing this, or is it like a program that you run?
For universities, there's a program that I've been involved in for the last 4 years with the University of New South Wales, which is called Sandbox for Education. And like I was trying to explain, the whole idea of Sandbox for Education is to take industry challenges that we face as consultants, as practitioners, to students and co-design solutions. So it's like a case study that we provide to them. It's like a 12-week program. We take them through lectures. We give them tools to solve the problems. And at the end, we get them to pitch their solutions back to us, to a forum of industry professionals. So that's one example. And similarly, I'm slowly starting to get into the schooling space as well. Like I said, you know, that's one area where I feel we need to do more as practitioners and be ambassadors for cybersecurity at the schools.
Yeah, that sounds extremely interesting. I think if you have any details that you want to share with me for the podcast, I can share that as well.
100%. I'll do that, Shruti. Thank you for that.
All right. So while you have been doing all of this, right, what has been your source of motivation that keeps you going? I know when we have like a lot of things, sometimes it can seem extremely overwhelming, but we all have like that one deep down motivation that really keeps us going, right?
I think there are two things that I can think of. One is more of a quote. I live by this saying, and it's in Hindi, Jaisi Drishti, Vaisi Srishti, which translates to the world around us is a reflection of our own inner world. It's such a simple but deep and meaningful verse. The second thing is more like I was saying earlier, I have this regret that it took me longer than it should have to discover my voice. And now that I've found my voice, I'm trying to drum the message of diversity and collaboration to support with solving this complex cybersecurity puzzle, which in a way motivates me to keep going, as we have covered a lot of ground, but there's heaps more for us to do as an industry.
Yeah, absolutely. But I think since you mentioned that you have that regret about taking time, I guess it's better late than never, right? So yeah, you have found your voice. So that's the important thing.
So true. And this is where for the last couple of years, when I've been actually closely working with universities here in New South Wales, I've seen students as young as 19, 20, 22, they've got so much crystal clarity about who they are and what is it that they want to leave as a legacy, what sort of social impact do they want and what's their purpose. Whereas I feel like it took me years to get there, and there's a lot of ground to cover now that I've discovered who I am and, you know, what do I really want to be standing for and what do I want to be known for.
All right. With that, I do want to ask you one last thing, which is, what is your advice for people starting out or people in the cybersecurity industry?
Let's start with people starting out. Be curious, be open to learning, practice active listening, which we were discussing just a bit ago, so that you're not listening to respond, but registering what is being shared with you. For people in the industry, let's start leveraging the power of analogies and stories and stop leaning too much on numbers and statistics that we've been used to in the past. The scaremongering isn't going to work anymore. Let's also come together and build a more inclusive industry that welcomes diverse perspectives, experiences, personalities, cultures in order to create a safe and inclusive environment so that we have all our focus on fighting the good fight and transforming cybersecurity into a fair fight.
All right. Thank you so much for that advice. So with that, we come to the end of this podcast episode, which also happens to be the season finale. So thank you so much, you know, for taking time to be the guest here and sharing your story. I really appreciate that. Thank you so much, Jay.
Thank you for having me here, Shruti.
Well, that was it for today, listeners. I hope you enjoyed listening to the season finale episode. In case you want to reach out to Jay, you can find him on Twitter by the handle @cybersec_Jay. Before I end this episode, I want to thank you all amazing listeners for being a part of the podcast journey in my debut season. I will be back soon and I do have an interesting line of speakers planned for season 2. So stay tuned for that. Until then, stay safe and take care.